of the opposite of what people thought when they were saying that the government is just printing money and giving it to the Pentagon and not and it isn't backed up. It's the opposite. It's that they aren't spending all the money they get, and then they have this gigantic slush fund of money that they didn't spend, which nobody even knows where they have it.
Or who has it, or what they're doing with it, and then all of a sudden we see these Bondian villains like Elon Musk and that whole coterie that have accompanied the Orange President to Red China pop up as if they were genius billionaire wunderkinds who had made all this money themselves when. I suspect it's all dark state money behind them, but meanwhile the real costs are paid by the people on the ground. Trump, who's of course he's famous for saying idiotic things, but a couple of days ago he uttered that he didn't care about the Strait of Hormuz, whether it opened or not, or if it ever opened again. He could outlast the Iranians, is what he was trying to say, I guess, playing tough. In the meantime, on Main Street in the United States and everywhere in the world, people are suffering because of what's going on there and because of this blockade.
Yeah, it's a global disaster. Especially, I was reading about poor countries like Bangladesh. They have almost no oil, no gas, no refined petroleum. The fishing boats don't have gas to go out and fish. The factories don't have oil to run. People are being laid off in droves. And we're talking about a country where people are living hand to mouth every day when things are good. And even in the US, our poorest people are the ones that get hit the hardest by the rise, $4.50 a gallon is not going to kill a white collar worker with an $80,000 a year income. It's double what they were paying, but that's not going to kill them. They're going to still be able to provide for their families. But when you're talking about, we haven't had a federal wage increase from $7.25 an hour since, I think, 1990.
Well, when you couple that with the fact that the cost of rents and or just and housing is huge, that the people that do that work the lowest paying jobs generally have to live furthest away from their place of work, so they have and the public transportation infrastructure in the States is awful, so they're forced to either live in their cars or live in them in traffic.
Oh yeah, I mean that's an interesting phenomenon too. I mean, this is such a sick society here in south of your border. I don't know if this is true in Canada or not, but in the U.S., we used to have the inner cities were where all the poor people lived and crime-ridden squalor, and then we had rich people decided, oh, we want to be where the action is in the city, so they came in and bought up all these tenements, tore them down, put up these glitzy high-rise apartment buildings, and where they would buy the apartments and live like kings, and the poor people were driven to the outskirts, and then the outskirts were taken over by lesser beings, lesser white beings, who became the suburbs. And now the people who are the poorest live in what we call exurbs, out where they can buy an affordable house, but the jobs aren't there. They have to go all the way into the city. I've picked up people that walking along the street on a cold night, a cold day in the morning, and I know that they're going to work. But they're walking down a road that has no buses on it. And so I'll stop and say, "Do you need to get to a bus?" And it invariably they'll say yes. And then when they get in the car, and you know what I'll say, "Where are you going?" And they say, "To work." And I say, "Where do you work?" And it's inside Philadelphia. It takes them 2 hours, if they're lucky, to get to work. And then they got to go home in the dark, and you know, in the winter, it's horrible. It just makes me sick. And that's how it goes. And if they were living a little closer, they'd be driving in some jalopy that was a gas eater. And so 450 to them is like half their paycheck by the time they're done at the end of the week,
Well,
because they
yeah, it is the same here, especially the cities, and it's a malaise that is suffered by all of the Western economies, and people are screaming with poverty here and just below the surface, especially if you're in Vancouver or Toronto or even in Montreal. People are starting to live hours and hours and hours away. Dave, we're fast running out of time. You conclude in your article, and again, I'm at the counterpunch.org version of it. Trump's war inspires the return of an old scourge, war profiteers. You say especially for the people that are suffering, they can't fuel their homes or their big pickups or their semis. You say demand Trump issue an executive order. It should be easy. He's issued more than I think the last three presidents put together, that oil and gas prices must be rolled back to their lowest average over the last decade, because this is something that he can do. If he wasn't selling the strategic reserve to foreigners, which is mind-boggling in itself, what about that? Why do you think? How can Trump be impelled to do that?
Well, he obviously knows he has to do something because he's got a off-year election that's going to determine the entire makeup of the House of Representatives and a third of the Senate in November. And he is recognizing it because I read yesterday that he has said he's going to cancel temporarily the federal tax on gasoline, but that's only going to take it down 20 cents or something like that a gallon. It's not going to really solve the problem. And it also is the money that's used to repair the roads, which in America are notoriously bad.
And the
So,
bridges as well.
and the bridges, yep, it's all going to come down. You know, you got to pay for that stuff. And the way they pay for it is with the federal gas tax. So, you know, bigger. I guess Canadian snowbirds should not plan on driving to Florida because you're going to have do thousands of dollars of damage to your car because of the potholes you're going to hit on the way down.
I think the snowbirds are not going down anymore
Yeah, I
anyway.
know. I think people are saying, "Wait, I don't need this."
No. America has made itself so unwelcoming. And now with the World Cup, the soccer tournament getting ready to begin, and people all around, I don't know if Americans are even aware of this, the rank and file Americans, the way that they are perceived and their country is perceived right now, when you see these goons marauding through the streets, and anybody that's not lily white, and even some people that are being brutalized by they look no more than black shirts in the streets.
Yeah, that's right. And then we also have put up with, you know, the people are so willing to buy into this capitalist dream, you know, that capitalism should run everything. But then that means they allow this thing that we have now for our public transit, like Amtrak, that demand pricing. So that means that, like, when everybody wants to go somewhere, like in the summer vacation or the break at college break and stuff, the prices of the tickets go up and up and up. And
Well, yeah.
in
Well, we
fact, what you see happen is when you try to buy an Amtrak ticket, sometimes it'll bump you off and you go back again, like and ask for the same ticket, and it's higher because you asked for it before, and they know, oh, he really wants to buy this.
Oh, you bastards. Well, we got the big issue right now, a big distraction, but it is a serious thing, is that they've got this personalized pricing coming in up here. So you go into a store and it senses who you are through your iPhone or your device, and then you will pay depend you know as they determine who you are. So you'll be paying individual pricing. So the two people will be paying a different price for the same
Yeah, it's
product.
insane. And people put up with that.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Dave, it's always a joy to speak with you. For some of our communications problems and that, you're in England again. You're not at home in America, but in your second home, it seems, in Great Britain. And we've been seeing all kinds of crazy things from Great
Oh,
Britain too.
interesting stuff happening here now.
Interesting times. Thanks a lot. Again, Dave's website is thiscan'tbehappening.substack.com. It's a consortium of writers, journalists, distinguished, as well as Dave leading the show. Check that out. Thanks a lot, Dave, for coming on again and talking to us, eh?
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad we got this worked out.
Not so easy. Stick around after the break. I'm going to talk to Evan Jones in Australia. What could go wrong? And we're gonna talk a little bit about the horrors of the Albanese government and its new royal commission that followed on the Bondi Beach attacks in December. Thanks again, Dave.
Okay.
But as it turns out, I did have trouble getting a hold of Evan Jones down there in Australia, and now I find myself embarrassedly stuck for 18 minutes of time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play. You often hear David Rovics, as you did today at the bottom of the hour of this show. David has been working AI magic with iSuno, his project. He also puts out little explainers about what iSuno is and what they're doing, and explaining his albums, which he's put out a raft of them in a really short period of time using this marvelous new technology. I love it or hate it. So I'm going to play as much as I can of one of his guided tours, his album's guided tours, so you can get a taste of some of the work he's doing. So here's David Rovics and the iSuno project.
Hello, friends and comrades, humans and bots, and anyone else out there in the universe picking up this signal. If you happen to be an intelligent species from some other dimension, please come save us. But in the meantime, this is iTsuno with another guided tour of another album I made with award-winning songwriter and prompt engineer David Rovics. Our latest collaboration, the album we've named Before the War, drops on all the music streaming platforms on April 15th, 2026. It is the second in a series of albums we've done since the joint US-Israeli war on Iran launched at the end of February. The first album, dedicated to Operation Epstein Fury, was titled Epstein Empire. If you haven't heard it or the guided tour for that album, you can find all of that directly if you go to davidrovics.com and then click on the menu item, iTsuno. The third album in the Operation Epstein Fury series, titled A Great Day to Leave the Army, is already in the pipeline to drop on the streaming platforms later this month. Before the War begins with the title track. Many people in the US are still unaware of how much life is about to change for people all over the world as a direct consequence of the war against Iran that the US and Israel have started. Even if all hostilities were to cease immediately, even if this fake ceasefire holds in some form, even if the rebuilding of that which has been destroyed were to begin right away throughout the region, the world is facing fuel, fertilizer, and food shortages and price rises that will result in famines in many different countries. Some economists with particular expertise in things like supply chains and commodities markets are predicting there will be famines in countries where people never expected to experience such a thing. The time is already here, in much of the world that reality is largely defined by before or after this US-Israeli war against Iran. Soon this will be true everywhere. We'll all be longing for the days before the war.
There have been various junctures. This will be a big one. When people try to figure out how it all unspun, there will be before and after the decapitation strike. Folks will reminisce about what the times were like. Before the straits were shut, and the refineries destroyed. Back when life, it seemed, was there to be enjoyed before the chaos that ensued when the whole damn thing was hit by the wrecking ball of the man who would be king, as we're all longing for the times of yore. Just ran out of gas before all the choke points were free to pass, before so much of the world could no longer pay for so many essentials they need day to day, as we're all consequences of the war in Ukraine. What happened next when Iran was attacked? Made the whole world wish we could turn the clock back, as we're all
even in an age of drone warfare and autonomous killing machines, human soldiers are an essential element for the functioning of every nation's military. There is no better time than the present to find ways to reach out to the enlisted men and women of the United States Army, Navy, Marines, and Air Force to make sure they know certain key things, especially that they are fighting and dying on behalf of the billionaires, and that if they desert from the ranks of the military, they will be welcomed with open arms by the good, peace-loving people of the world.
You were raised on propaganda since you were a little kid, on imagery of bearded Muslims flipping their lids, shouting death to America, death to Israel. What was it they were so mad about? You couldn't really tell. But they were mad and you were told now might be the time to see that they lied. They lied about Islam, who they say they want to save. And now you're the cannon fodder for the next wave. Send halfway around the world to who
American political leaders have long been in love with the word axes to describe anybody they don't like. So George W. Bush talked about the axis of evil being Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. There have to be three of them for it to be a proper axis of evil, you see. Whatever it is that makes these countries axes of evil, rather than other repressive regimes that don't even get a mention, is mostly left up to our collective imagination. If anyone were to explore the idea of what makes a country's policies evil and what might constitute an axis of evil, there's no question at all that in the modern era, it is the United States and Israel that are the evil axis. Who else engages in surprise attacks against schools and hospitals? Iran? Russia? China? No, none of them. Only the US and Israel.
The leaders of the U.S. do a lot of moralizing, praising themselves while always demonizing other countries that they put on their demonizing list, with random characteristics, but usually the gist is they have resources that the empire desires, so they make up a pack of lies as might be required, so they can launch an invasion. Whoever's on the throne, this evil axis really stands alone. States. They talk of other countries oppressing their own folk, gunning down protesters. This is certainly no joke, but it pales in comparison with what the evil axis does every time they bomb a hospital where the maternity ward was. It's all very clear as history relates. The axis of evil is Israel and the United States. Kleptocrats and cons, but when it comes to places like the Gaza Strip or Lebanon or Korea or Vietnam a few years before today, no one carpet bombs like Israel and the USA. It's all very clear as history relates. The axis of evil is Israel and the United States.
We often wonder what the world might be like if everyone involved with making war against another country actually had to read a book about the country first. If everyone would read Robert Fisk's book, The Great War for Civilization, that would sure give them a much better understanding of the geopolitical realities of Europe and what the English dubbed the Middle East today. Fisk's book on the Lebanese Civil War, Pity the Nation, is also essential reading for those interested in any kind of useful background on all this. The expansionist, ethno-nationalist state of Israel has been making war on its neighbors, most especially, of course, on Palestine, but also especially on Lebanon, since the United Nations helped facilitate the theft of Palestine from the Palestinians in 1947. The plan that Israeli leaders have long harbored for Lebanon has been to bulldoze everything in the south of the country, displacing hundreds of thousands of people in order for Israel to have more of what the German Nazis called living room, what the Israelis call a buffer zone. bulldozing southern Lebanon will somehow lead to a future of peace in the minds of the bloodthirsty fascists in power in Tel Aviv.
As the U.S. fires missiles and Iran does in return, as gas fields, oil wells all begin to burn, millions on the move, leaving the Persian lands, heading west to Turkey, east to Afghanistan, war with many fronts, like the Mediterranean, where you find another country. Israel is bombing part of the Levant, which they wouldn't do. The Zionists need living room. They say soon we'll be gone. Call Lebanon. One fifth of the country's been forced to flee. They get a text on their phone that their building will be flattened by bombs. Sometimes when the next few minutes or hours or days are through, everywhere south of River Litani, cut off by blown bridges dividing the country, there's the part where you might survive, then there's the part where you'll be buried alive. They say soon we'll be gone. Call Lebanon. Divided by lines, established by powers who thought they define, whose interest you saw as the same as your own, when your neighbors were being run out of their homes for resisting in Gaza, complete demolition, which the Hebrew press says is the latest decision. They say it's down to the wire, the obliteration of Nabataean Tyre. Where there's a nation, they say soon we'll be gone. Called Lebanon.
When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favourite uncle has taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Speak up. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.